first programme, and hear the second of the two tonight on BBC Radio 3 at 10 o'clock.
Hello, I'm John Shea. Welcome to this Sunday afternoon here on BBC Radio 3. In a couple of minutes, the keyboard music of Frescobaldi in today's early music show with Catherine Bott. But now, with the time at 1 o'clock, here's the latest BBC news. Human rights lawyers have criticised the Home Secretary for accusing some immigration judges of ignoring new guidance designed to deport most foreign criminals. Theresa May insists that the right of criminals to retain a family life in Britain must be balanced with the need to protect the public, and she's promised legislation to increase the rate of deportation. Security sources in Nigeria say at least one Briton is among seven foreigners who've been kidnapped in the north of the country. Police say gunmen stormed the site of a construction company in the town of Jamaare. The commander of the US-led NATO forces in Afghanistan says he accepts the Afghan president's ban on Afghan security forces calling in airstrikes by NATO-led forces in residential areas. General Joseph Dunford said there were various ways to support Afghan forces other than air ordnance. A British teenager who was lost in the Australian outback for 3 days has said he was just hours away from death. Samuel Woodhead, who's 18, went missing in Queensland on Tuesday. He survived by drinking contact lens solution. The head of the Bar Council, which represents barristers in England and Wales, has said she believes that in many cases suspected rapists should have their identities protected until they're convicted. Maura McGowan says the stigma attached to sex crimes means that reputations can be damaged even if the allegations are proved false. Pope Benedict has appeared at the window of his study overlooking St Peter's Square at the Vatican, one of his last public appearances before stepping down as head of the Roman Catholic Church at the end of the month. The Pope thanked the crowd gathered below for the support they had given him in the last few days and asked them to continue praying for him and for his successor. Cricket. England have lost the opening one-day international to New Zealand by 3 wickets in Hamilton. Having bowled England out for 258, New Zealand reached their victory target of 259 with 7 balls to spare. And the weather. Most areas will have a dry day with sunny periods. However, southeastern parts will become cloudier and western Scotland may be fairly cloudy throughout. Top temperatures will be between 5 and 8 degrees Celsius. And that's the news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at almost 3 minutes past one. So in just under an hour from now, we're off to Leeds Town Hall for a concert recorded last week, our Sunday concert given by the BBC Philharmonic, Beethoven's Violin Concerto, Webern's Passacaglia and Brahms' Fourth Symphony. That's at 2 o'clock. Before that, time for today's early music show. Catherine Bott focuses on music by a pioneering 17th century master of the keyboard.
Girolamo Frescobaldi, born in Ferrara in 1583, has been called the father of the keyboard. He was lucky enough to be the son of an organist, the godson of a composer, Luzzasco Luzzaschi, and to grow up in a musical hothouse. Ferrara was ruled by Duke Alfonso d'Este, an obsessive music lover and lavish patron. Taught by his godfather, the boy Girolamo was a keyboard prodigy, exposed to all the best in music and instruments. Visiting composers included Dowland, Marenzio, Monteverdi and Gesualdo. At the age of 25, he began a stellar career as an organist in Rome, where he would live and work for much of the rest of his life. He taught Froberger and Pachelbel and influenced the work of John Blow and later J.S. Bach. Although he didn't always handle his personal affairs very efficiently, his playing won him a considerable following. Someone once said of him that all his knowledge is at the end of his fingertips. Thank you. the Toccata Seconda from Frescobaldi's second book of toccatas and partitas, played by Fabio Bonizzoni on a newly released recording of books 1 and 2. Fabio founded the acclaimed ensemble La Risonanza in 1995, and he says that whether playing or conducting, the point is always to get the music the way you like it. The reward is always to get in reality what you have in your imagination. Well, a great deal of imagination and insight has gone into this compelling recording. The BBC Music magazine calls it a benchmark disc, fusing intellectual rigour with soulful expression. And to discuss this arresting and involving repertoire, I'm delighted to welcome Fabio Bonizzoni himself, down the line from the Netherlands. Welcome, Fabio. How nice of you to join me.
Thank you. Hello.
Staying with that outstanding review for a moment, it begins with quite a provocative statement, really. It was Girolamo Frescobaldi who unleashed the keyboard's potential to turn human passion into purely instrumental sound. What is it that sets Frescobaldi apart from his contemporaries, do you think?
I think it's very true, the sentence. I think he was the first one who got a mature language for expressing the movement of the soul through the keyboard. And I mean, it's like if we don't have to guess which are the sentiment painted, but actually we just see it, it's just evident.
We have to set his output against a background in which really most early music is vocal, isn't it, over a few centuries. Was he, as I've read, the first composer to specialise in instrumental music?
No, he was not the first, I think, but he was definitely the most successful. And I mean, his achievement in instrumental music, particularly on keyboard music, are just the most important of his whole career. I mean, if you take Monteverdi, of course, he was a genius for voices, and he was just a genius for the keyboard. In this sense, I understand people saying that his knowledge was at the tip of his fingers, because, I mean, it's just through the tip of his fingers that he could create these incredible masterpieces, these never-ending stories, in a way.
Fabio Bonizzoni. Let us concentrate on the two volumes of Toccatas and Partitas. You've called them Frescobaldi's greatest achievement, his masterpiece. Why do you say that?
I believe that in this music, in these two books, is where it really touches us more. Because, I mean, I'm not denying the importance of, for instance, the Fiore Musicale's last publication. But in a way, the freedom, the intensity of this music, which is in the two books of Toccatas, I think is not matched by not any other Frescobaldi compositions, but as well most of other people compositions in a way.
One thing that very much strikes me on listening, you've absolutely grasped what I've always felt completely necessary in playing or indeed singing the music of Frescobaldi. You need quite a lot of courage to let it speak for itself and to allow less to be more and to allow a spaciousness and a really keen feeling of timing. Would you agree with that?
I always try starting my interpretations to say from the page, I mean from the music, from the sign which is in front of me. That's true for all music, but I mean it's particularly true for the music of the 17th century, and I would say it's particularly true for the Toccatas of Frescobaldi, that the sign is not complete at all, it's just a suggestion somehow. So my aim is always to let the sign speak somehow, and for doing that we need time to listen to it somehow, no? If you understand what I mean. We definitely need to put a lot of light on these signs, but at the same time just to give air around it to let it sound, to let it speak. And when we play on beautiful instrument, that's of course very important, because we can allow the instrument to speak, the acoustic of the church to speak, I mean to sing, in fact.
Well, let's just stop and talk about the instruments. You've used a new harpsichord and an old organ.
In a way, it's easier, I think, to find a well-restored old organ than a well-restored old harpsichord. And so for organ, I didn't have doubt that I wanted to find a beautiful old Italian organ. And I had the luck of finding this incredibly beautiful Antegnati in Mantova, in a church which actually is a very important church, which is Santa Barbara, so the church of where Monteverdi has been maestro di cappella. So already getting into this church is just amazing. And then when you sit down the organ and you play the organ, which has been the organ of Girolamo Cavazzone, another great organist, it's just everything amazing. But I mean, at the moment when the pipes start sounding, you realize that it's really something magic, something which belongs in a way to another world. It's an incredible luck to be there. For the harpsichord, as I was saying, it's more difficult to find an antique in good conditions, in a good place for recording. It's all difficult. And I just choose to have a copy of an Italian instrument, which I think is a very fine copy and sounds, I think, very fine on the discs.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and today I'm talking down the line to harpsichordist and organist Fabio Bonizzoni about Frescobaldi. The organ, Fabio, is an extraordinarily beautiful sound, and exceptionally so. On the second CD, you've put all the organ pieces together on the second CD, and track 7, which is a levitation toccata, designed in church services to be played during the Eucharist. That is an exceptionally bold start, isn't it, Fabio?
The two elevation toccatas are between the most incredible pieces Frescobaldi ever wrote. Now, you can play on any beautiful organ, but I mean, when you have the chance to play one of these pieces on a mean-tone-tuned antique Italian organ, you really get transported to another world, I would say. And also the fact that this organ actually has been discovered to be a transposing instrument, so that the voce umana, the famous a bit out of tune stop, can be played at its best, I think, in 12 foot instead of 8 or 16. It gives such a human, exactly human character to the sound as to be, I think, really touchy.
I'm reminded, Fabio Bonizzoni, when listening to the more highly wrought pieces, that, of course, Frescobaldi's life overlapped with the Mannerist movement in art. And we have this concept of writing, I'm sure you can explain better than I ever could, the stilus fantasticus. Can you give me a bit of a definition of that? Because it's extreme music in places, isn't it?
Frescobaldi is said to be the one who invented, but definitely I would say, if not the one who invented it, the one who sort of started it in a mature way, and very much the composer who exported this stilus fantasticus to over the Alps through Europe. What is it? I mean, I think it's basically a stylus, where the fantasy, it's freedom from tempo and rhythm precision. It can just flow. And the incredible thing with Frescobaldi, I think, as with the main composers with Stilus Fantasticus, I mean, we have to name not only Buxtehude, but as well the young Bach, and maybe not only young at some point. It's the fact that the virtuosism, the flamboyant of it, of the Stilus, is not just to impress people, to show off the capability of the hand of the player, but actually it goes straight again to our heart. It's like painting a sentiment. It's like a gesture of an actor on scene who just with the moving of one hand just moves our souls, bring us in tears or bring us in happiness or whatever. And I think this is the real essence of the Stilus Fantasticus. So not having things organized or apparently not organized and just having just pure moving gesture.
Thank you.
The first levitation toccata from Frescobaldi's second book of toccatas, played by Fabio Bonizzoni.
The very main point is when he says that these compositions, I mean the toccatas, are written in imitation of the style of the madrigals. And I think very much, in a way, there's no music which is more keyboard than this. And at the same time, there's probably no keyboard music which is more vocal than this.
I've read that you have said that it's very helpful to exercise a literary imagination, particularly referring to poets like Petrarch, to make these pieces into stories.
The point is that when we read literature, when we read poems, for instance, it's very clear which are the sentiments we are talking about. And sometimes in front of this keyboard music, we might end up thinking it's keyboard music. But I don't think it's keyboard music in a way. As I said before, it's music that paints sentiment. And in this respect, I think it's easier to get into this if we have clear in mind the source of inspiration is not the keyboard, but is the sentiment. I mean, I do it often with my students, actually, when I try to make them understanding how one can grasp the real meaning of a page of Frescobaldi or of a line, of a bar of Frescobaldi, just helping them in showing verses where Petrarch or Tasso or whatever talks about despair, love, and deep sentiment of life. Thank you.
Fabio, could I ask you to define briefly and simply what a toccata was and what a partita was in Frescobaldi's time?
Toccata is basically means touching somehow, and it's a word that just refers to the fact that you touch an instrument. But of course, in Frescobaldi time, has the meaning of a free composition, which might have actually not or less free parts in it. We have the feeling of an improvised composition, so an improvisation written down. So I think this is what toccata is very much for Frescobaldi and was for his predecessors as well.
Well, using the word toccare, to touch, as yeah. the English idiom, a toccata touches on several ideas, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Very true, because it touches an instrument, it touches us as well. Yeah, absolutely, it's true. Partita is basically a set of variation, actually. So we usually have a kind of theme and then variation, or even more, actually, we have like a harmonic pattern, which is usually a popular, or I mean belonging to the culture of the time, and sees different development. And we have not talked so much about partitas, but actually some of the very best pieces in the two books. No, every piece is a best piece, actually, in these two books. But actually, the Partita sopra la Romanesca or the Partita sopra il Ruggero are absolute masterpieces. Thank you.
You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and today I'm talking to harpsichordist and organist Fabio Bonizzoni about his wonderful new recording of Frescobaldi Toccatas and Partitas. It's been said that Frescobaldi's music is made first for the fingers, then for the spirit, and finally for the ear, which is not perhaps the order you would expect. Well, not the order I would expect. What do you think about that statement? And how do you interpret it?
Well, but you can if you think you still produce the music with the fingers. So I think we can see that way. So you produce it with the fingers. It goes through your heart and then it gets to the ears somehow. I think it's very fascinating to think that the last thing is the one you hear, but the first is what you do and what you feel. And then it just comes like the less important, the least important in a way, what you hear. Interesting. I like that.
I'm very interested in how you teach this repertoire and how virtuosic, for virtuosity's sake, is it? It's not really, is it? It's more spiritual than anything else. So how do you impart the best way to tackle this music to your students?
I very often do little theatre play, in a way. While they play, I just tell them kind of stories or situations more than stories while they play, and try to make them understanding what I think is the message behind the music. And of course, about the virtuosity, I mean, still, I think it's great if you don't notice in a way that it's virtuosistic music. But of course, the virtuosism is there, so I don't believe in just playing the whole thing slow. And I think he as well points this out in the preface, that at some point we just have to show off somehow. And I mean, we know he had these 30,000 or 3,000 or 300, whatever, people just amazed by his capabilities as an organist. He was a famous improviser and performer. So definitely he was a virtuoso. And I think the virtuosistic, if we just take it for itself, I think we lose part of the message. And if you integrate this virtuosism into the expression, then we really win, I think.
Could you bear to give me an example of a particular piece? I would imagine it might be a toccata that demonstrates virtuosity.
The most famous is the ninth of the second book, where he seems to have really pleasure in writing something difficult, and he gives this famous sentence at the end, non senza fatica si giunge al fine, so no, without effort you get to the end. And actually it's a very complicated piece from the just digital point of view. But still, it's not just difficult, it's still very expressive. He integrates all kind of polyrhythmics, all kind of double trills, just to show a bit like Bach wrote the Goldberg, if you want, just to show that he can just play the most difficult stuff. And that's the same with Frescobaldi. It's a bit on a smaller scale, but his mastery of his fingers is on that, the ninth toccata. Thank you.
Fabio Bonizzoni in highly virtuosic mode playing the ninth toccata from Frescobaldi's second book. Now, you have put these 23 stories in music and a couple of other things on this recital disc. Who played these pieces originally, apart from the composer himself? I mean, were they intended to be played, do you think?
Yeah, hard to say. I mean, these volumes were published with the clear intent of Frescobaldi to get an important place in Rome. I mean, very often the publication of the 17th century were thinking now to the famous Vespers of Monteverdi, were published with employment in mind. But definitely, I think the quality of the music had been noticed anyway by the play of the time. So I believe that is music that music lovers and keyboard players have always played, because Even in the time when the language was not so well understood, we still find that some of his pieces were inserted in anthologies for the organist or the pianist or whatever. So we always had the knowledge, the feeling that we were facing masterpieces.
Well, speaking purely as a listener rather than as any kind of player of any sort of keyboard that anybody would want to hear, I cannot recommend your recording of these Frescobaldi partitas and toccatas too highly. And I cannot thank you enough, Fabio Bonizzoni, for sparing the time to talk to me about them today.
It's my pleasure.
Canzona Quinta from the second book of toccatas by Frescobaldi, played on the organ of the Basilica of Santa Barbara in Mantua by Fabio Bonizzoni, who was Catherine Bott's guest on today's Early Music Show. The programme was produced in Salford by Chris Wines, and you can find full details of the music from today's programme on the Early Music Show pages of the Radio 3 website. Now, just before our Sunday concert, a look ahead to Wednesday evening's concert with Martin Handley.
A Haydn cello concerto with Stephen Isserlis. And Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, preceded by a look through the work in Discovering Music. Radio 3 live in concert with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra at the Lighthouse in Poole. Radio 3, Wednesday night at 7:30.
It's a minute after 2 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3, which means it's time for the Sunday Concert, which was recorded recently in Leeds. It's presented by Adam Tomlinson.
And welcome to the Town Hall for this afternoon's concert with the BBC Philharmonic and its conductor emeritus Jan-Pascal Tortelio. The concert sees two great masterpieces, music from a man who gained a reputation as one of the most radical figures at the start of the 20th century. We're going to hear Beethoven's Violin Concerto to begin, Brahms' Fourth Symphony to end, and between them, Anton Webern's Opus 1, his Passacaglia. With his 5 concertos and 32 sonatas, we often associate Beethoven with the piano, but we should remember that he was also a very capable violinist. The D major violin concerto we're going to hear now wasn't his first, and there are sections of one from the early 1790s, but sadly the rest of this concerto is lost. That said, he also wrote 2 romances for violin, one of which might be a reworking of the slow movement of that lost concerto. Beethoven wrote his D major concerto very quickly at the end of 1806 for the violinist Franz Clement as a debt of gratitude for letting Beethoven perform his Eroica symphony in public for the first time. Now, it's no surprise to us now to see that this concerto is about as symphonic in its structure as it possibly could be, particularly in the development of short motifs. And it's the very first thing we hear that sets the whole concerto up. 5 repeated notes on the timpani prove to be the first movement's kernel. Today, our soloist, Augustin Haderlich, will play the cadenza by Kreisler, and it's worth noting that the soloist's return to the orchestra's accompaniment in the first movement is a gentle one, rather than what was then usual, a set of climactic trills. Here it's piano, soft, and dolce, sweet. Just another very personal Beethovenian touch. Applause in the background you can hear for Yuri Torchinsky, who's the leader of the BBC Philharmonic. And now here, our soloist today, Augustin Haderlich, with Jan-Pascal Tertelier joining the BBC Philharmonic on stage here at Leeds Town Hall to play the Violin Concerto by Beethoven.
Thank you. Thank you.